We are going on a year without any conventions. So what are some of the telltale signs of con withdrawal? Matt, let's start with you this week.
Cosplaying around the house.
See, mine is going through my own comic books and selling them to myself for a ridiculous price. But the worst part about it is I already have all the ones that I'm looking at. Lydia, you're on mute, Lydia.
Yeah, I realize that. Yeah, Matt kind of took mine, but I mean, I keep looking at all these pop figures and thinking, you know, I feel like I'm missing one. Surely someone has someone around here somewhere, and it's just not here in my house anywhere, no matter how much I look.
Nobody's selling the pop I need. Why is that happening?
However, there is a Metal Gear Solid duck in the house now, though. Like rubber duck.
I mean, that kind of makes up for it.
This is true.
You're listening to The Geek Awakens with Mitch,
Matt,
Tabitha,
Lydia,
and Ticket.
All right, guys. I feel weird talking about this first story just because there's a lot to unpack. And when Ray Fisher, a.k.a. Cyborg from Justice League, first kind of broke this story or whatever last year, I didn't talk about it again because it's just like there's a lot going on, you know. But we can't ignore it anymore. We can't. So last week, former Buffy star Charisma Carpenter took to Twitter to accuse Joss Whedon of misconduct, including retaliatory behavior and harassment during her pregnancy. And then she's also gotten some response or whatever from some of her fellow Buffy co-stars. David Boreanaz? Is that, am I pronouncing
it? Boreanaz.
Thank you. I never watched Buffy, okay? Or Bones. He was on Bones, right?
Yes.
Yeah. He was on Bones. Well, then Star of Angel.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. That still doesn't excuse me for not knowing how to pronounce his last name, but whatever. It's fine. It's fine. So he responded saying, quote, "I am here for you to listen and support you. Proud of your strength." Buffy herself, Sarah Michelle Gellar, "While I am proud to have my name associated with Buffy Summers, I don't want to be forever associated with the name Joss Whedon." Also, Michelle Trachtenberg said how it was kind of like an unspoken rule that Joss wasn't allowed in the same room with her, or at least like in the same room alone.
Alone.
Yeah. Now, I guess to kind of preface this, like, you know, yeah, I wasn't ever a Buffy fanboy. Really, I think the only property that Joss was a part of that, you know, I had a really good attachment to is Firefly. And even that's only been, you know, in the last few years. So, I don't know. I'm kind of conflicted. But, like, what do you guys think? I mean, does this tarnish your feelings about, you know, the shows that he created? And, you know, like, clearly this tarnishes his, you know, portrayal of, you know, someone who is, you know, four strong feminine, you know, characters, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, it's kind of along the same lines as the whole J.K. Rowling thing. I don't think his actions overall are going to tarnish the feelings towards the properties, but more just him as a person. Say, at this point, the feelings for the shows are so ingrained that the impact they have is completely separate from him to me.
What do you think, Matt? Yeah,
I pretty much have to agree that I think that those that are fans of Firefly, Serenity, of the Buffy universe that he created, I feel like those fans are still going to be fans of essentially what he created. I just don't know that they will be fans of him and future projects that he takes on. And it's very strange to me that he's always been known as this advocate for strong female characters, and that now this information comes to light. You know, and it's not that nobody believed Ray Fisher when his story kind of broke last year, but it's having it be ratified isn't the right word, but like that there are other people coming out saying the same thing, you know, is like, I don't know.
It's like a switch for the entire like persona that he's created for himself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that I kind of thought of, you know, when I was, you know, really delving into this is like, you know, like it's like a projection, you know? Like, you know, if I project, you know, that I'm this character, then nobody's, you know, going to believe when I do things that don't, you know, follow that, you know, storyline, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy. And like the more that you read about it and the more that you delve into it, it's just like, I'm speechless.
Yeah. It's disturbing. It's sad. It's just, I don't know. You're right. There's just so much to unpack, and being like, I love Serenity, Firefly. I have for, I don't know, pretty much as long as I've known it was around. I have started watching Buffy, and I'm really enjoying the show. I don't know. Like I said, it's just so, it's such a juxtaposition from the portrayal that he, like the persona that he's had out there.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Whedon.
Oh.
Wow.
I'll go ahead and shame myself on that one.
Yep.
I deserve that.
Five of those ears are ringing.
Surprised that she's not like making her way downstairs like right now, you know, like
I feel like she'd be the type to just like throw the bell down the stairs to get her point across.
Yeah, you're right. You're yes. Right. So, got a couple of reviews to talk about tonight. The first one is out now from Valiant Entertainment. It's Savage Number One, written by Max Bemis with art by Nathan Stockman. So, Kevin Savage was raised in an alternate dimension where his parents were killed by dinosaurs. Now he's back home in England, is a viral star, and who is also managed by his brother, and just so happens to witness mutant dinosaurs attack London. So full disclosure, this book is a sequel to a 2017 miniseries. I didn't know that going into this, and while it doesn't completely leave you hanging, it does kind of, like, the first couple pages kind of expect you to know that, and it does a good enough job of kind of tying everything up, in my opinion, at least, because I was like, huh, what's going on? And then as I kept reading, it made sense and it clicked. That said, I did also go on to Comixology and get the first series so that I can go back and, you know, really know what's going on. But that said, this was such a fun read. It's got a lot of pop culture references. Also, I love this idea of a teenager adjusting to fame while also being a modern day caveman. It's kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, I'm here for it. Matt, what did you think?
Yeah, I definitely was kind of lost to start with because I didn't realize that this was a sequel, essentially, or follow-up. But even though I didn't have that information, I got bits and pieces as I went along, and I really enjoyed the character. I got to the point where, like, I basically just I was hoping. I mean, I now know that it's like the answers I'm looking for are in previous issues, but I was hoping that we would get more revelations as we go through. And you started kind of got some of those puzzle pieces as you went through, which I really enjoyed. And it's just a fun read. And him taking on the dinosaurs was just, it was pretty epic.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to spoil anything, even though, like I said, it's out now and you need to go and find this book like right now. But yeah, the art during that dinosaur battle was just like, yeah. As much as I hate on Michael Bay, Michael Bay would like recreate that scene fantastically.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
So out February 24th from Oni Press is the 10th anniversary edition of One Soul by Ray Fox. So this book tells the stories of 18 people all throughout history whose lives unfold simultaneously. So, not gonna lie, this book, it is a little daunting at first, trying to take in 9 different stories all at the same time. Actually, no, I take that back. It's 18 different stories all at the same time. But, like, so reading it, you know, I eventually, like, as these 18 individuals, as I kind of start to grow up, it kind of clicked for me. And then, you know, I just kind of saw what Ray was going for with this book, just to kind of, like, just show just how humanity can be, like, connected, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I would have preferred color over black and white, but, I mean, that's, like I said, that's a personal thing. It doesn't lose points for being in black and white, you know? That said, I really think that this is the type of book that needs to be read physically. Like I feel like I'm not getting the same feel for it, you know, reading it on my phone as I would if I actually had the book in front of me. Matt, I know you didn't get too far, but what were your initial thoughts?
No, I think you're right that this is one of those that would be more well appreciated in physical form than in the digital copy that we had access to. It's daunting, but it's impressive at the same time to be able to tell this story, these stories simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
About the only thing that I kind of wish was a little bit more straightforward was that some of the stories jump around from like panel to panel. I think I would be following it a little bit easier if like the caveman panel was always in the same spot and the like 70s like housewife like kid growing up in the 70s like panel was always in the same spot like on the page. I feel like that would help me, at least me, like follow those stories just a little bit easier. But I also think that probably if I were sitting back down with this, it would become clearer as I went through.
So this one, the last book that we're going to talk about tonight, it's Secrets of Camp Whatever. This is also out from Oni Press. This doesn't come out till March 17th. Now you can still pre-order it. Let me double check real quick to see when the cutoff is. I want to say it was, yeah. So the final order cutoff for this book is February 22nd. So if you're listening to this right away, you still have some time to go to your, you know, local comic book shop and be like, hey, I want this. It's by Chris Grine. So Willow is off against her will to her father's old summer camp, filled with mysterious fog, disappearing kids, and possible vampires. Matt, let's start with you on this one. What did you think?
This was fantastic. I love this from beginning to end. I just demolished this. I don't even know. It didn't take me near, like, it was 270 pages and it didn't feel like that at all. It's a quick read. I love the art style. It's one of those where, like, I don't know, I've talked about this in a couple of cases, especially with Oni Press items, where they hit that sweet spot between not being, like, over-detailed and not being under-detailed. Mm-hmm. It finds that sweet spot with the design and the colors and everything for this. I don't know. For me, this is one of those things that I love. It's vampires and monsters and creatures and whatever. but the story, it definitely is volume one. So you get to the end, and while you get answers, which I love, that this is definitely a comprehensive, it's a complete story, but there is more story to be told, and I need this in physical copy, and I need volume two, like, ASAP.
I didn't get a chance to finish it. I'm about halfway through. But yeah, but I mean, like, this was, like, it was hard to put down. When I finally had to, like, I read some of it last night before I went to bed, and I read some more of it this morning before going to work. And, like, if it weren't for the fact that, you know, like, I'm a big boy manager now and, like, I can't call in, I would have called in just so I could finish this. This is a really, really fun book. The main character, Willow, she wears hearing aids, which is awesome because you don't get that representation a whole lot in comics. You do sometimes. I feel most famously probably is Hawkeye. But yeah, like, so it's amazing to see that inclusion. I also, like, I really love a lot of the other characters. They're really, you know, like, well-rounded. I love I can't remember his name, but the head camp counselor.
Oh, Trotter?
Yeah, him. Yeah. He's just, he's one of those characters that you love to hate.
Oh, yeah.
But going back to Willow, though, like, you know, she doesn't let the situation that she's in with her hearing aid, she doesn't let that stop her, which is fantastic. It's definitely something that, you know, even if you don't have that particular issue, you can still, you know, appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
But this book, it's full of mysteries and some definite laugh out loud moments. This is also, like, as I was reading it, I was like, man, like, I could see this being like a Netflix cartoon or something like that, you know, like, but
yeah, this would be a lot of fun as a cartoon. I mean, the characters, this is another one of those too, where, like, the characters' voices are all different enough where you do really get to the point where you're hearing these different characters and how I don't know. I had different voices in my head for each of these characters.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so a couple of press releases to talk about real quick before we get into Gut Reaction. So the first one, Vault has teamed up with Graphic Audio for two Vagrant Queen audiobooks adapted directly from the graphic novels. The audiobooks will have a full cast, sound effects, and music. The first one, Vagrant Queen and the Bezor King, is out now. And Vagrant Queen and A Planet Called Doom will be released on April 21st. Also, Oni Press has announced an all-new single-issue series from Rick and Morty co-creator Justin Roiland. Orcs in Space follows three not-so-bright orcs as they take the best spaceship in the universe out for a joyride. The first issue comes out July 7th. I'm not a huge audiobook guy, but what I've read of Vagrant Queen, I really like. And something like this, you know, especially with a full cast, you know, it's almost like, you know, like a radio play or something like that. You know, it's like, it's kind of sparked my interest a little bit.
Yeah, I managed to find a couple of podcasts last fall that are like dramatic, full cast podcasts. And I didn't think it would be something I would enjoy, and I really do. And I think this is one of those things that would translate well into one of those scenarios. So it'd be fun to listen to.
Yeah. Also, Orcs in Space, like a title like that coming from somebody who, you know, co-created something like Rick and Morty, like, I really, really want it to be July 7th right now. I want to read this.
Sounds like a NASA spaceship, Rick, and I'm all for it.
So one last thing, talking about comic books. So as I've mentioned on a couple times in the past, Kickstarter has gotten a lot of my money since, you know, we haven't been going to cons. I've been buying a lot of comic books off of Kickstarter. One of the ones that I bought, it was the first issue of Red, White, and Broke, which tells the story of Captain Stronghold, who's a famous superhero, but he can't hold down a job in real life, so he turns to crowdfunding. it's a fun book, and there's going to be a virtual launch party for the Kickstarter launch of Red, White, and Broke, Confessions of an American Superhero number 2. It's going to be on Tuesday, February 23rd at 6 p.m. Central Time. So the launch party is going to include a preview of the book, reward tiers, and prizes, or info on the reward tiers. This was a fantastic book. I'm going to drop the link to the Kickstarter, especially once it goes live, but I highly recommend that you check out this Kickstarter.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's so good. So, all right, guys, let's do some gut reaction.
Oof, gut reaction.
And we're going to start with Tabitha, who is going through Matt, I guess.
Yeah.
Living vicariously through Matt, I guess, with Redwall.
I mean, she's sound asleep right now, so. So Redwall is a fantasy book series that was published from 1986 to 2011. Netflix has acquired the rights to this fantasy series. Brian Jacques is the author. There are 22 books in this series, and Netflix has bought the rights to make a feature film. They are bringing on the creator from Cartoon Network's Over the Garden Wall as the writer. The movie is said to be based on the first book of the series, but they're also developing a show which will follow Martin the Warrior, who is a mouse, who is the main character of book 6, probably one of the most famous characters of the Redwall series. If you've seen a picture of like the mice from Redwall, you've probably seen Martin. I think this is fun. I think this is cool. You know, when the article mentioned that they've been trying to find, you know, the next Game of Thrones. And while this is like a children's fantasy series, like a YA fantasy series, this very well might do it. There's a lot of content here, a lot of places to go with it. So, I'm going to go cautiously thumbs up and hope with Netflix at charge that they do this well.
I'm going to go thumb sideways. It's an interesting concept. And Netflix does more right than it does wrong. But at the same time, I feel like, especially with this being something that like I was unfamiliar with, you know, 2 minutes ago, I would want to have a little bit more of an idea of what it's going to be like. Lydia.
I've never actually read this series, but I've seen the covers of it before. I just never got around to reading it. But it looks cute. Being Netflix, like you said, they usually do more right than wrong. And having people attached to it that worked on Over the Garden Wall, which is adorable. If you've never seen it, you should go watch it. Just makes me want to see what they can do with this all the more. So I'm going to go thumbs up.
Speaking of Netflix... which is funny considering how it was just like, oh yeah, Netflix does more right than wrong. So Netflix has ordered a straight to series 8-episode order for Wednesday, which is a live action spinoff of The Addams Family. And it's about Wednesday's time as a student at Nevermore Academy. The series is a sleuthing, supernatural infused mystery directed by Tim Burton. I'm good, brah. Thumbs down. Lydia.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you. I don't think this is something that we need. You can do a creepy sleuthing story without making it Wednesday Addams. Thumbs down.
Matt.
Yeah, I have to agree that if you're going to do something like this, you could very well create another character. You know, for this, you don't necessarily have to make it a spinoff. I mean, the idea of Tim Burton being attached to it, visually, it's probably going to be pretty cool, but is the story going to be there? You're going to go thumb sideways.
Matt, you've got some news on Captain Marvel 2.
Do so. We have a villain. Well, we don't have a villain. We have a casting of said villain. Deadline is reporting that Zoe Ashton is joining the cast as Captain Marvel's main villain, but we do not know who that main villain is right now. There's no news on who she might be playing. I'm going to say I'm not familiar with the actress. But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, Marvel casting news. I'm going to have faith that they have picked the right person for whatever role, whatever villain she plays. So I'm going to go thumbs up.
Yeah. I was going to go thumb sideways, but you know what? It's a 1-2 punch. You're right, Matt. Marvel doesn't mess up when it comes to casting. Also, if they're not telling us who she's playing, it's probably going to be somebody real good. So yeah, thumbs up. Lydia.
Say, I still haven't seen the first Captain Marvel. It's one of the few I haven't seen yet, which is impressive because I've gotten almost all the way through the MCU at this point, guys. I have no frame of reference for Captain Marvel to begin with. I don't know who the actress is, but Marvel's done good up to this point, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I'm going to go thumb sideways just because lack of knowledge.
So America's sweetheart, Dan Levy, recently hosted Saturday Night Live. One of the skits celebrated 10 years of the It Gets Better project. The skit also featured Kate McKinnon, who played a woman who really doesn't like her wife's iguana. So now It Gets Better is selling iguana pins for a $20 donation. I didn't watch this entire episode. I did catch some of the skits like on YouTube. This was one of the skits that I watched. I said this in our group when I posted the story. We don't deserve Kate McKinnon. She is phenomenal. This is a giant thumbs up. The skit was hilarious. And you know what? I've spent $20 on dumber things. Lydia.
I have so many questions about this iguana. I don't do Saturday Night Live, but sure, thumbs up. Give me an iguana pen.
Matt.
I mean, this looks fantastic. I feel like I need to go watch this this skit for sure. But oh my god, it gets better. That's I don't even know what this is, and I want this pin, so thumbs up.
Matt, I really don't want to talk about it, but let's talk about Face Off 2.
Well, you know, the sad part is that I really do like this movie. It's one of those 90s action movies that I could put on at any time and just watch all the way through and just enjoy. There's been rumor for a while that Face Off 2, Face Off Again, I don't know, there's something in the works. Adam Wingard has announced via Instagram, and he will be co-writing and directing this new project. The Instagram, he announced, "I would never reimagine or rework Face Off. It's a perfect action movie. Simon Barrett and I are writing a sequel." So we don't have any casting news, so we don't know if John Travolta and Nicolas Cage are coming back to Face Off again. But the fact that they're actually going to do a sequel to this, it's not something we need a sequel to, but at least they're not trying to remake or reimagine or rehash the same story. I'm going to go thumb sideways because as much as I love the original and it's not a remake, I still don't know that we need this.
I'm going thumbs down. I'm sorry, Matt, but I have never seen the movie, so maybe I'm missing out on something, but I don't feel like I am, and I definitely don't think I'm missing out on anything with the sequel. Lydia.
Yeah, I also haven't seen it, but the fact that it's John Travolta and Nicolas Cage kind of scares me, so I don't know. Because you're excited, I'll give it a thumb sideways, but yeah, that's all I got.
I don't know. If for me, it's like, it's Face Off, Gone in 60 Seconds, The Rock, and Con Air. Like, you could put those on and I'll just sit down and watch the entire movie anytime.
This is fair.
So we've got a pretty solid lineup for whenever we want to do Guilty Pleasure or Dumpster Fire again.
I mean, you know my answer for all four of those already, so.
True. That has an unfair advantage.
I will watch them again. No shame.
All right, so we are going to do some trailer takedown, and I really, really, really need to get on Bickett about doing a soundbite for trailer takedown.
Mm-hmm.
We need it. But anyway, we've got four trailers. We're going to knock it down to one. We'll try to do this quickly because there are a couple other stories I do want to talk about. So the first matchup is Justice League versus Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat came out today and Justice League came out earlier this week. The Justice League with the Snyder Cut, I've said multiple times, you're doing too much, and now there's Joker, okay, whatever. Mortal Kombat, for me, I don't know, I shouldn't be excited about this movie, and I don't know if it's something that I'm going to see. Maybe I'll watch on HBO Max so I don't have to, you know, tell the person at AMC that I want to see this movie. But it was pretty good to hear things like, you know, like Finish Him and what was the other one? There was another like really big Mortal Kombat phrase that they said in it. Yes, yeah, get over here. I was like, okay. So I'm going to give Mortal Kombat 8 and Justice League 2. Matt.
As far, this is hard because basically just based on the trailer, I'm pretty much going to follow suit. I think I'm going to go 7 for Mortal Kombat because even though you can tell that the plot of this is going to be basically non-existent, like visually it looks like it's going to be awesome. It looks like it's going to be one of those popcorn kind of movies. Justice League, it doesn't do enough to really still make me interested in this 4-hour long behemoth. So 3 points for Justice League.
I like how Justice League isn't doing enough, but at the same time, it's doing way too much. Lydia.
Yeah, say to me, Justice League just looks like it's going to be 10 pounds of crap in a 5-pound bag. There's way too much going on and not enough going on at the same time. Like, this trailer is just a garbled mess. And then, like, I still haven't seen Suicide Squad, so I have no real frame of reference for Jared Leto Joker. That very last bit of that trailer with him made me cringe so freaking bad. Like, no, you're not Joker. Just shut up. Jump off the building you're sitting on. And then I expected Mortal Kombat to be really, like, campy. And it wasn't. It looks really serious and really well done. And like you said, I like the little game quotes they threw in there. I feel like being a movie coming out in 2021, you could probably have done a little bit better on some of those CGI effects, but I digress. I am much more excited to see that than I am to try to watch whatever mess that is Justice League. So yeah. 8 for Mortal Kombat and 2 for Justice League.
So with a score of 23-7, Mortal Kombat moves on. And it is going to face the winner of Cruella versus the Nevers. Matt, let's start with you on this one.
So The Nevers is that Joss Whedon project, which has been coming from HBO for quite a while now. He did leave the project in November. But basically, and the article kind of says this, this is a mashup of like Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes, Amazon Prime's Carnival Row with female only X-Men. So female superheroes, basically. This trailer just looks awesome. I mean, it really does. Like, I can't come up with a better description than like mashing those three together of X-Men, Sherlock Holmes, and Carnival Row. It looks serious, but it looks quippy at the same time. So for Cruella, this is one of those where we all kind of thought about this and we're like, why are we getting a backstory movie for this character? Didn't really know I needed it until I watched Emma Stone kind of just walk in, kick ass, and take names. Like, it's just awesome. But for me, as much as this trailer does make me want to watch Cruella, I still don't think it does enough for me to justify the fact that this is actually even happening. So I'm going to go 8 points to Nevers and 2 points for Cruella.
Lydia.
Nevers for me looked interesting, but I don't know. It didn't catch my attention the way I kind of wanted it to. And then, like you said, with Cruella, when we first started talking about this, I thought, why do we need this? We really don't. But yeah, watching this, I am much more inclined to sit down and watch this movie now. And that's saying something, because I was really concerned about Emma Stone being Cruella, and that's not anything against her. I like her, just her as that character sounded wrong, but that trailer completely changed my mind. So I'm going to go 7 for Cruella and 3 for Nevers.
All right. So I enjoyed both of these trailers. Same thing with Cruella. I didn't think that this was necessary. And then with the Nevers, even though I feel like we probably have talked about it on the show before, I was, for all intents and purposes, going into that trailer blind. Mm-hmm. Both of these products, like, I don't know if it's, and I reserve the right to change my mind as we get closer too, but as of right now, like, neither one of these are still things that I'm like super, super excited for. So I was going to go 5 and 5, but I do love Emma Stone, so she gets an extra point. So I'm giving Cruella 6 and The Nevers 4, which brings us to 15 and 15. So we are tied.
Oh no.
So I guess Mortal Kombat has to go up against Cruella and The Nevers. I mentioned this was going to be a triple threat trailer takedown before we added in Justice League. So it's still going to end up as a triple threat trailer takedown. That's a lot of tease. So, Lydia, let's start with you.
Oh boy. Of the three, the one I think I'm least likely to watch would probably be The Nevers, partially because it's on HBO and I don't have that. So I'm going to give that one 2 and then split. Let's see. I'm having to math now. This is not fun.
Sorry.
2 to Mortal Kombat, 6 for Cruella. There we go. Wow. That was way all more right. Difficult than it should have been, guys.
All right. Matt, where are your points?
I'm going to go 4 for Mortal Kombat, 4 for Nevers, and 2 for Cruella.
Perversing it on me.
I'm sorry, Matt. When you were talking, I was like, ooh, I need to put my points down real quick. And I didn't write down a single thing. So, hey, you mind giving that to me one more time and I'll actually pay attention?
Sure. four for Nevers, four for Mortal Kombat, and two for Cruella.
Okay. sorry, guys.
I can't do math. Mitch isn't listening. We're just...
You're a mess.
That's nothing new, though.
No, right?
All right. So I am giving four for Cruella, three for the Nevers, three for Mortal Kombat. So that brings us to... All right, so Cruella wins 12 points, and then each of the others get 9.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait, go Emma Stone.
Way to go, Emma Stone, and way to go with the Dalmatian cameos in that trailer, too.
Right, mm-hmm. The way that they growled at her?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's setting stuff up.
It's ominous foreshadowing.
So, Matt, let's talk about Moon Girl.
So Disney announced they had like a thing where they announced casting and information regarding the Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur series for MCU or for sorry Disney Plus, right? Yes. And it was announced. Kind of the one of the headlines of this was not just some of the casting, but the fact that Lawrence Fishburne is not just producing, but he is going to be he will have a recurring role as the Beyonder in this series. The interesting thing, I think the reason that this got most of the attention for this like casting information is it because the Beyonder has played a pretty significant role in the comics in the past. Like he was a catalyst for the Secret Wars. So knowing that the way that Marvel likes to intersperse and tease things with the MCU, I think people are wondering if, we get Lawrence Fishburne playing the Beyonder, what kind of movies and other stuff will that be setting up? Some of the other casting we did get, is that, Diamond White is going to be playing Moon Girl, also known as Lunella Lafayette. Devil Dinosaur is going to be Fred Tatasciore. And then Alfre Woodard is playing Mimi. So got a few of the names out there for this series. Obviously, you know, production and stuff have yet to start. When we will see this on Disney Plus, you know, to be determined. But I don't know. It's shaping up to be pretty interesting. Should be fun.
Yeah, that's one of those characters, like I haven't ever talking about Moon Girl. It's one of those characters I've never really given too much of a chance to. Nothing against her. It's one of those books that's not for me. But that said, I mean, yeah, this is shaping up to be something that I could really dig, and especially if Lawrence Fishburne's involved, I'm like, okay, you've got my attention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So we talked last week about Gina Carano getting canned from The Mandalorian. Got a couple of little tidbits. So while some people are trying to make hashtag cancel Disney Plus a thing, which that's cute. I mean, yeah, you can cancel Disney Plus as much as you want. You're not going to hurt Walt Disney.
You can cancel your own subscription, but that's about all you're going to get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, with Golden Girls coming to Disney Plus later this year, you're going to be coming back. So just stop. But there is also a petition to recast Cara Dune to have none other than Don Cheadle play the character. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Now, I had seen that there was some internet chatter about trying to get Lucy Lawless to be recast as the character. But Don Cheadle?
Yeah. It actually kind of makes sense. Because Don Cheadle has experience with playing a character who somebody else played first. He took the role of James Rhodes away from Terrence Howard, so it only makes sense to have Don Cheadle play any character that needs to be cast in any Disney property.
That's the logic they've got?
Yeah, basically.
That's Mitch logic.
So, but for those worried about Gina Carano, don't worry. She's already got work lined up. She is going to partner with the conservative media outlet The Daily Wire for a new film project.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. So she said in a statement to The Daily Wire, she says, "The Daily Wire is helping make one of my dreams, to develop and produce my own film, come true. I cried out and my prayer was answered." She then goes on to say, "I am sending out a direct message of hope to everyone living in fear of cancellation by the totalitarian mob. I have only just begun using my voice, which is now freer than ever before. And I hope it inspires others to do the same. They can't cancel us if we don't let them."
Maybe she can get the MyPillow guy to help produce.
I would rather have the MyPillow like smother me than watch whatever the movie this is. Too far? Might have been too far.
Maybe.
But I mean, at least the MyPillow, it's supposed to be really comfortable, right? So, I mean...
Supposedly. I don't know. He did his own research.
Guys, I've gotten into a really dark place. And I feel like the only thing that's going to get me out of this really dark place is the Baby Yoda news desk. So, Lydia, help me out on this.
I mean, I will do my best. So, this is actually Tabitha's story, and she would have done a much better job than I of telling it. But... basically, what happened was Zach Galligan, who is from Gremlins, got asked, who was cuter, Gizmo or Baby Yoda? And, I mean, of course he's going to go for his little buddy, because, you know, solidarity and all. But I'm pretty sure Tabitha disagrees, and I do as well. I love Gizmo, don't get me wrong. But... he was asked about it because of all the different social media posts with the memes comparing Gizmo and Baby Yoda. And he said, "Well, I'm going to say my buddy is cuter. He's fuzzy, and to me, fuzzy is cuter. Baby Grogu seems like he's kind of in shape. Or maybe he's hairless." So is he just saying, like, any hairless animal or hairless person is not cute? Because that's just rude.
Baby Yoda is not a chihuahua.
That too.
Baby Yoda can also be fed after midnight.
And gotten wet.
Yeah.
So, you know, he might steal all of your food.
Yeah.
Or your pet frog, if you have one, but...
yeah. That's a small price to pay for being in the presence of such cuteness.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Zach. Galligan. Yeah, he doesn't own an island.
I'll be entirely honest. Before we started, I didn't really know who he was, so I had to look up the fact that, oh yeah, he was the kid from Gremlins. So, I mean, obviously he hasn't had much of a presence since then, or I would have known what his name was.
I mean, he's entitled to his wrong opinion.
This is true.
Still wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Still wrong.
That said, though, like, I do kind of want to see, like, a maybe not a fight, but some type of contest between Gizmo and Baby Yoda.
I mean, if fight would be kind of funny. Like, there's YouTube channels that take random characters and actually pit them up against each other to see who would win. I would like to see one of those between Baby Yoda and Gizmo.
Yeah.
Like old school MTV Celebrity Deathmatch?
Ooh.
Yeah, there you go.
Only if you have, what was his name? Miles, who was the referee?
Oh, God.
Wasn't it Miles? It started with an M.
Yep. No, I can't find it.
What?
Miles Lane.
Yep.
Mills Lane.
So.
There you go.
Oh, goodness. But yes, if we can get him on board too, then I'm all for it.
Yep.
So, all right. So that's going to do it for this episode of The Geek Awakens. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, be sure to check us out on social media. While you're there, give us some feedback. Tell us what cool stuff we're missing out on. That's not a thing. any questions, comments, or concerns, shoot us an email at thegeekawakenspodcast@gmail.com. Again, thanks for listening. We hope to catch you next time. And everybody say bye.
Bye.